We're here again. Thank God we made it another week into holiday season. Thank you, everyone, for wishing us a happy Thanksgiving. We took off last week to really give some thanks to everyone in America and around the world, all our friends, of course. And thank you for wishing all of us here a wonderful Thanksgiving. Some interesting news. I worked with this wonderful cat named Lenny Walker. Lenny produced records in the 90s, and I just received not such great news that he passed, and I want to wish condolences to him and his family. It's this that time of year where things you start hearing more and more towards the end of the year, and, you know, with COVID and things, it's been a rough time. But that's not the reason why I'm doing this. It's just why I'm bringing it up is because check in on everyone. Pick the phone up. If you haven't heard from somebody in a while, call them and say, hey, are you all right? Because what we're finding is people being forgotten about. And then all of a sudden you find out they're no longer with us. So use the damn phone. Check on your loved ones. Check on friends. You know, it's been a rough couple of years. So that's why I say check in, check in, check in all the time, because you never know who's with you and who's without. Christmas season's coming. I got some big names I'm going to be mentioning soon. We got a special Christmas show. I'm going to be advertising that soon. But, you know, a lot of great things we have in store for you all, especially around Christmas. Can you believe last year around this time, almost a year now, we had Kathy Sledge from Sister Sledge on around Christmas time. So I'm bringing another big disco star who's done disco, R&B, and house. Wait till I announce this artist. You're all going to be like, holy smoke. Wow, you got her? Yes, but I'm not going to say any more. Well, welcome to True House Stories. I'm Lenny Fontana coming out of New York City. And this week, I turned the telescope lens to the United Kingdom. I've been talking about this guy all last 2 weeks. His ears must be on fire from me talking about him so much. He is what I call one of the, you can't say old school, you're going to say in between of the new school, because he's right, fits in between, and he's doing it right now. He's known in the Tribal House arena. Comes from the Braga House, Speed Garage, and all that wonderful stuff that goes on in the UK. But his thing now is putting out some tough productions with his partner, which we will talk about, Mr. Taffa, as well on the show. He's been involved in the pirate scene in London, and those that know how important that pirate scene is, how many records broke out of that pirate scene? I mean, I'm going to put it like this. One of the biggest pirate records to come out of that pirate scene was my record called Spirit of the Sun. And it's because of these guys, like who I'm going to bring up, rotating the hell out of it, okay? Became a Speed Garage anthem. But enough about me. That's not about me, this show. This show is about this iconic figure who's in Tribal House music, okay? Started at the record shop, worked his way up to pirate shows, touring the world now, gone to Africa, done Miami. He's done it all. He said he didn't touch New York, but that may change soon. New York may need him as well. But with no further ado, I like to bring up to True House Stories in the house, DJ Super D. What's up?
What's happening? Thanks for having me, man.
Yes. Glad to have you, brother, man. Thank you for agreeing to do the show. And we've at True House Stories, we've taken things to different roads. We're not just sticking with the Chicago, New York, and, you know, underground London house. We're also looking to broaden our horizons and show the different flavors. And I felt you were the most appropriate to step to us to bring your story and share it with all the viewers, because it's an important story, brother. So yeah. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So before I start, how are you doing? Everything going well?
Yeah, can't complain too much. Cold, but can't complain. You get me? Busy as usual, and yeah, in good health. So can't complain too much.
That's the most important part. Health is wealth, as they say. So without no more pausing, I like to get right into it because I know you got a lot to tell us. And I ask it each and every time the same way, and I'm going to appropriately ask it to you as well. How does music find the young? Let me show everybody. Let me show. How's the music find this boy? That little man right there with the 45 RPM. With the Victrola.
Well, born into it, man. Just born, like, obviously, like, growing up in a Jamaican household, and my dad, like, into the sound system thing. He's had a sound system and stuff like that. So, yeah, I was born into it, man. Probably in this, my head was in the speaker box sooner I was born. So
let's start with the boom boom, because I hear I hear a Jamaican accent.
Not accent. I wasn't born there. I'm born in here, but my background is Jamaican.
Well, I can hear that, the English Jamaican accent. Mm-hmm. Like, it's clear. I can hear it. So I was so Jamaican, from what I know, because I've had other Jamaicans, Londoners, on this show, is about the sound system culture.
Yeah.
So is your family a big part of that as well, in the reggae sense or any of that, you know?
No, this, like, no, there ain't no big names there like that, but that's, we will grow from that. It's like my dad had a sound system and that's all I know. I was born into it, and that's his, like, main love. And I don't know, I think I just took his trait on. That passed right down to me. Nothing else except that.
That's why I'm asking, because it seems to be a very important thing in that culture. The sound systems in the Jamaican culture. Big sets, reggae music, good feelings, all that goes with the whole of the Caribbean vibe.
And it ain't stopped even today. Go in the living room, there's a big sound system in the living room. When they go to my parents' house, nothing ain't changed. So it's just how we grow, man.
So from the time when you were a young lad to grade school, are you formally trained in any instruments or anything like that?
No, funny enough, no. All like no instruments. Like, obviously you do the odd in primary school, you do the odd little violin and cello and things like that, but nothing that I took serious. I was always into the sound system side of things. I didn't really care about instruments and stuff like that. I wish I did learn now. Obviously it's never too late, but I wish I'd learned how to play the piano.
In 2020 hindsight, did you ever think when you were a young kid you were going to be making records?
No.
So you're talking from an adult talking to that young child saying, you better learn an instrument. You'd be telling your son that. You were like, you better learn something. You better learn how to play at least the keyboard, right?
Yeah, the keyboard. I would say more the keys. I wish I learned that.
So your father being a sound system guy, it's gonna rub off on you. It's in your DNA, basically.
Yeah, basically. It's in my DNA, so...
So who were the first DJs you saw playing out that inspired you to say, oh, I want to do this, I want to try this? Where was it, maybe?
Ooh. A lot of the stuff, see, like, when growing up, the DJ, it was, like, more, obviously, all the reggae stuff. And obviously, because my dad had sound system and decks and that, it was just probably through him, really. And then, obviously, during school, obviously, everyone got into the jungle, that period, jungle drum and bass sort of era, in the early 90s and that. And that's when I started DJing myself, was from that. Yeah.
And that's basically because of your dad. So your dad's really your muse in a way. He's the one that got you off the ground.
Yeah. Like, in a way, yeah. Because, that's all I saw. So that's what I wanted to do. And, so back. Yeah, so I've started the Jungle Days, like me and Jammer. We started, yeah, we bought some turntables and things. Whereas from Hackney Wick, one of the little markets, it was like a little £5, no pitch control in it and stuff like that. We made our own slip mats and everything, and we were just practicing from then. And obviously, as you get older, you ask for one, I think it was like a sound. I remember I asked for some decks for one Christmas, like a sound lab deck. And then I got one deck, which is, it's like, and he's like, thinking, what can you do with that? You know, well, you need two.
Let me say this to you. I went to Carnival and they had the system set up and they had typical selectors there, one with a massive sound system, and he only had one turntable.
And that's the
culture. Play the record, selector gets on talking, play the next record. Yeah. No mixing. Just
the echo chamber on will be on. And that, yeah, and then they change the next tune.
So who got you the turntable? The one.
My parents got me one turntable.
And they knew you only needed one.
No, they didn't know I wanted two, but times are hard, isn't it? So, back then, so.
No, they said you're gonna do it with a microphone. You're gonna do it like the selectors that we go to see at Carnival. One turntable, microphone, echo box.
I know that's how it is. My dad had decks at the time. I think, yeah, my dad had himself, but also I wasn't allowed to use his.
So, what was the actual lore in the house? Don't even go near them, right?
Yeah, I had my own little setup. Yeah, my dad had his own setup, and I had my own little setup. And luckily, obviously, I had friends around me. I think there was a stage as well. One of my mates, DT, he had one as well. For me to like just put them together, and then I'll take my deck to his house or vice versa, or so we can have two and so we can get our practice on.
So who was the one that taught you guys or showed you? You must have picked up the mix from somebody.
I think I self-taught, I think. There ain't no one that could tell me that they taught me, I don't think.
Well, let's be clear.
But
vinyl was the only way at that time, correct?
Yeah, vinyl, yeah. Vinyl.
So there was no sync button. There was no Pioneer generation, right? No,
none of that. The real way.
The real old-fashioned way. So basically, you had to earn your stripes, right?
Exactly that.
How many hours a day were you practicing and stuff at that time?
I don't know. Every given moment, it was like, even like from school, like school days, come home from school, that's the first thing I want to do. There's even times when I got in trouble, when I might have got sent home early. Mom and dad ain't even at home yet. And that I would jump on the decks, things like that. I was always on it. Weekends was like record shop and then back home to mix.
A passionate thing. That's a passion. Exactly. You wanted to just be good at the job. That wasn't even a job. You just wanted to do this, right?
Yeah. I wouldn't have been thinking about making money or anything or a job like that. I just wanted to do the music, DJ, and yeah, just perfect what I'm doing.
Was there a competitive thing between you and your friends, like who could be better at it?
Not really. We just everyone that was around me kind of at the time was all kind of like on the same level anyway, in terms of mixing and stuff like that anyway. So, but we was all on the same page and understood that sort of, and like what we wanted to do and like how to do it. And yeah, it was
so
the right people around me at the same time, basically.
So Super, listen, what's the graduation to get that Techniques 1200? Because everybody wants that badass bad boy, right?
Yeah.
Because you have a sound lab. That ain't no Techniques, bro. Yeah, that's a sound lab. You know what I'm saying? Lab,
I had to practice on that. And then, even like, I didn't get to. So even when I started playing on techniques, a whole different vibe, whole different feeling. And it's like you have to get used to that. But obviously, I didn't have them until way down the line. One of my mates had some from my area. Guy named who had some? My mate, one of my mates, Darren Dell. Name is DJ Bandit.
DJ Bandit.
I remember back in the he's a bit older than me, but he had some. I remember he had some early days.
And Bandit has some coins in his pocket to afford those things, because that's not an easy.
I don't know how he got them, but I know. See? I remember them. So yeah, I used to play on them a lot. But it just, yeah, and then afterwards, obviously certain little radio state, you get little practice, certain little radio stations end up going on, and like in the early days, and yeah, we just, from there, you just, I don't know, just used to it. You get used to it, innit, after a while.
Sure.
Once you know the basics, then it's all about, yeah.
So basically from that point now, you're starting to get the basics down, and what style of music are you playing at that time since you're starting out?
Jungle, yeah.
Oh, all jungle? Okay.
Yeah, it was a jungle. I was playing. Me and Joe started collecting jungle tunes, and obviously while I was in school, I was collecting and save up your money, you know, on the weekend. Even if I didn't, because I had a good rapport of the record shop. They used to if I didn't have no money at the time, they'll give it to me, let me pay on the weekends and stuff like that. And yeah. And that was my weekend, man. Go record shopping and yeah, the good old days.
What record shop did you frequent in that time?
At the time, I was going Wide for Sound Records, which is in my area in Hackney, in London. And I ended up, yeah, they ended up giving me a job there afterwards when I finished school, like on the weekend, because I was going there so much before, and obviously. I was going every after school, just even if I was picking up flyers and things like that, I was just collecting flyers, listening to tunes, jungle tunes, everything. I couldn't even go to the raves then at that time. I was just, you know, like you're playing the music, you're enjoying the whole vibe, listening to the station. Like at that time, it was like Cool FM, like DJ like Brocky and
I want to ask you what this
vibe. Yeah,
there's DJs that you're listening that are inspiring you guys.
Yeah. At the time, at those days, like DJ Brocky was my go-to. Yeah, every, I think it was a Sunday night, I used to listen to them every Sunday night, and then obviously I had to travel, and then, you know, you want to try to find the tunes, but like, you always used to have the exclusives. So I used to travel around, to go to my local shop. Then I used to go to like Black Market Records and stuff like that. And yeah, just go all over the place, man. Just go hunting. But yeah, man, I loved it. The whole feel, you know, like, you know, you're going to get up and go, you're definitely going to find something new. You know, like that feeling when you go, and searching for new tunes and stuff. So, yeah.
Were you actually recording the shows on cassette at that time?
Yeah.
And then taking it to the shop and say, yo, brother, can you listen to this and tell me what this is? Because a lot of guys were doing that back then.
Yeah, a lot of cassette. Loads of cassettes, like recording, like every week. Or sometimes I might tell you the name on air or something. But, yeah. But all of that, yeah, man.
So you're basically a proper train spotter.
Yeah, exactly.
Because if you're looking around for records, that's a train spotter. Looking for that, you know, the hot tunes. Yeah. That's what DJing was about back then.
Yeah.
It was hunting, right? Hunting out the hottest records.
Yeah, I'll spend my whole Saturday afternoon doing that. And yeah, that's all I cared about. I didn't really... those times I didn't really care about being out with friends and stuff and doing all of that. I wanted to go record shop, go on my own as well. I ain't waiting on no one. I would just go on my own a lot of the time,
right? Yeah. And going to hang out and learn what's going on and listen. Yeah. And it's like, you know, it's like school in a
way. Basically.
I try to explain that to people, but they don't understand that now because everything is digital downloading and streaming. Yeah. So that kind of mentality of that camaraderie.
Someone couldn't send you, hey, here's a tree, let me email it you. Nah, none of that.
Email it?
None of that. You have to search through. You have to dig through crates.
So you're doing, I would say, your school days between going to school and record shop on the weekends. When do you actually get your first either party that happens for you, like a proper party where you actually DJ, or you begin to work in the scene?
I remember DJing at the school disco. Got hired, me and my mate DT, we got hired to play at our school disco, and got sound system from my dad and stuff. Mm-hmm. Went the van to all the equipment to the, yeah, that was one of the early, that was, I think I was, how old was I then? I was 14 or 15.
So I'm going to guess at that point when you did that, you became kind of like the super coolest hero in the school, I bet, because they saw the sound system and everything come through, right?
Yeah. I was the man.
That's usually what happens. All of a sudden, now you go from who is he to, yo, I want to hang out with this fella.
I was always cool anyway, but just made it. It's like an extra boost in it. I was just that, you know, like, even in the area, just that the DJ from the area, there's a few of us. Like, and then this grew in it. Like, you start playing at little parties, people's birthdays and things like that. And yeah, this kind of just grew and grew. Is this something that, and then you do little pirate radio stations, start getting into that and dabbling here and there. I can't remember how old I was. I think it was Pressure FM or something like that. One of my mates, Spidey G, he took me there for the first time. And I've done a couple sets up there with him. So like in Jungle Days, and then what else was there? It never stopped.
So and when did you get actually working in the record shop?
When I left school, I started working in a record shop, and that was Wide for Sound Records.
So that was like your official freshman job to the industry.
Yeah. So I always used to go there. They gave me a job on the weekend. R.I.P. Tony, that gave me the job. That was every Saturday. Was it Friday? Yeah, every Friday and Saturday I was working in there. And then I was there for about, I don't know, a good 10 years.
Oh, you're there that long? Wow.
Yeah, a good 10 years. Then I went to another record shop. So the picture this show, that was the second record shop.
It's the only one I have.
Yeah. That was Rhythm Division. I started there in 2000, and I don't know, I think it might have been 6 or something like that. Yeah, something like that. I can't remember.
So when you got into the record shops, was that your introduction to getting to the pirate stations? To know who the guys were when you were servicing everybody?
Some people, yes. There was, because a lot of people used to come in there. Obviously, a lot of people, like all the older heads, used to come in there that's been in the scene and get to know. Obviously, I'm the young one that's playing the tunes for them and things like that. But you get to know certain people, like even up to this day, like they're remembering me from the record shop, right? And people like Mikey Sherpa that does Back to 95 and stuff like that.
Mikey Sherpa.
Yeah,
people House like FM. That. House FM guys.
Yeah.
Bobby and Steve. Yep.
Yeah. So people like that, even from even went on his early station, London Underground, back in the day. Because obviously from the jungle, obviously I went on to play in Garage. and went on to play in Garage. Because like a little crossover at the time in London as well, with the jungle in it. Then obviously the Garage sort of came in, and that was kind of like the hot thing in London. And then also I was in that world as well. So I liked both. There was a time where I liked both. And but then I started getting heavily into the Garage.
So who was the guy that said to you, yo, dude, I want you to come down and either guest DJ at this pirate station, or what was the background story to you getting your door in there, getting your foot in the door, I should say?
I think it was, because when I first went up, it was like with the jungle thing, that was Spidey G that brought me onto, I think, one of my first shows on Pressure FM. But then when the Garage thing, then it would be like Mikey, I think, because he'd come to the record shop, then my where it's to work with Tony, he knew a lot of people and always introduced me to people, and I think it was through that where I got to go on his station on the underground and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Tony Ritt, RIP, right? Tony
Ritt. No,
and
yeah.
What station Tony was involved in?
No, he wasn't involved. He was obviously who I worked with in the record shop, but he's like, yeah, he's just a man that knows, everyone knows him. He's the main guy at the record shop, and that's, yeah.
Yeah, because I always say somebody godfathers somebody in sometimes. Yo, it's like, let me introduce you to such and such, and next thing you know, you want to do a show, kid?
Yeah,
it's one of them. Happen like that?
Yeah, basically. Yeah. So well, I'm not one to put myself out there, but someone always think, nah, you like, they always say you need it. So some people just do it for me. Yeah. So.
Elaborate. What do you mean?
Like, I wouldn't ask myself, come, please put me on.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You were waiting there quietly saying, dude, you want to do a show?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't sell myself, basically.
So who was the guy that said to you or gave you that first break?
In terms of, ooh.
Well,
saying the only, it's like the pet, yeah, there's a quite a few. It's different, you know, because there's different eras and different times of certain things. So,
okay, so let's rephrase it. Who gave you the most important break? The one you go, wow, this was, you know, in hindsight, you look back and you go, wow, this was really big. It opened so many other doors.
Got over the same Tony again, because he one of his mates that they used to do events in Amsterdam and stuff. So I was like 18, I think I was 17, 18. Probably about 17, actually. And I used to go to Amsterdam, like, they used to take me over to Amsterdam to play, like, UK Garage, club called Sinners, and a promotion called Need for Speed. And I was playing, and from then I was playing there every week, every other week, like, in Amsterdam. And then the people that you've done that, they was doing Miami as well. So, okay. Yeah, when I got asked to do Miami Winter Music Conference, I think that was like a major thing for me. I was there for like 6 weeks.
Oh, you stood in Miami for 6 weeks? Good for you.
Yeah. And I played at, who was I DJing for out there as well? Num Nums as well. I was DJing Num Nums at the time as well in Miami. It was good. That was 2001.
Is that the same time when you, because I got some notes, that's why if you look down. Yeah. Is that the same time when you were at Magic FM? Or is that before Magic?
It's around that sort of time. Yeah, it's around that.
So give me the timeline before Magic, because I remember I asked you that.
Yeah, before, with the Garage, before that, in 1998, I started on Mission FM. And that's 1998. I think I was 16.
And how big was Mission FM in London?
That was very big at the time. It was a big pirate station at the time. It was like me. I was in a crew called Bachelor Crew at the time.
There we go.
Yeah, I was in a crew, Bachelor Crew.
And how big was that crew?
We was getting there. At the time, the main crew on the station at the time was Heartless Crew. On Mission FM was Heartless Crew. And then I think, yeah, we was like after them really. But yeah,
Heartless Crew. So when you say crew, is it like 3-4 guys on a show?
Yeah, so it was like me, it was like myself. So it was like, at the time it was like 2 DJs and 2 MCs. It was like myself, mate, GGB, Glenn Goodstuff, Butcher. It was another DJ. And then you got MC Frost and Rodney B. We was the Bachelor Crew. And that was, we started that in, on Mission FM, that was 1998 till like 2000 when they changed it to Y2K FM.
For people who don't understand the pirate scene around the world and how important that was in London, how is that pirate scene ran? Was it ran like you go to a BBC studio or is you going to someone's house? You know what I'm saying? Because I know I was there. I seen it. But most people don't know. They don't understand what radio is like.
Yeah, those times there was like, you're on a kitchen worktop and stuff like that. You're in someone's house and you might hear babies screaming in another room, and then we're in the other room in the kitchen, doing a show. It was only later than when things evolved, when everyone started to put money into things. But at the early days, it was wherever, however.
So it's basically, if it's at such as gaff, you go there in their bedroom and
basically
just go do a live show.
Yeah.
Ghetto style.
It was very ghetto. But
total ghetto.
It worked.
I'm assuming that from those pirate stations, nights would pop up. Nightclub events, right?
Yeah.
So from your first station to Magic.
Yeah.
How long were you at? Was it Mystic? Mystic, right?
Yeah, the Mystic. I was on Mystic as well. I was like a local station in my area.
Where exactly? East, West, London?
East London.
Okay.
In Hackney, that was there was Mystic, so I was like, was all doing that. And then was doing that for a period of time. My people, Aggie B, he had that set up. And there's quite a few of us on there from the area. We're just doing our thing. And then I think from then, went on to Magic for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
Same again. Like that, the events, whatever not. Then from Magic, I believe went on to Deja Vu FM. That's where so it was like still garage times and everything. And then it started to on Deja, and it was start the crew thing started to get a bit more like the end of the Speed Garage and stuff and the two step and that, and it went into snort more grime. When it's that sort of era, grimier, So we're still Bachelor Crew at the time and everything, and was doing shows on there, on Deja, and there was like a crew day. Like I think on a Monday, just like all the crews, all the different crews was on a Monday. So you had like our crew, we had Rough Squad, we had Nasty Crew. Who else was there? No, a lot of the main crews in that world was all like, and all the famous like clashes on the rooftop and things like that, and that whole grime scene, a lot of it was based from there. And so we're doing that for a bit, but all this time I'm still working in a record shop and listening to music and different music and things like that. So I got into, say 2000 and say around 2003-ish, I was collecting and more house stuff. So I'm hearing more than like, I'm in a shop, so we're getting import stuff like and things like, and then listening to stuff, because obviously you have to listen to everything that comes in and things like that. And you start hearing things and thinking, okay, you just start liking. So I used to buy certain house tunes and just put them down. I weren't playing it out anywhere or anything. This my personal collection, basically.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So I had a nice little selection, like just building up this personal stuff that I feel, yeah, I like this.
You can't help that, but it happens, especially when you're working in a record shop. You're going to be entangled with other things, new stuff that maybe you never would, you wouldn't normally probably look for, but now it's in front of you, right?
Yeah, basically exactly that. So, I got to the stage, I had a nice little selection. I remember on Deja Vu, everything was getting a bit too ghetto in terms of the whole crew situations, and it was going a bit left. So I know they stopped all the crews and things like that on the station, and even the whole grime thing altogether. I think they kind of banned it off there, but obviously I still stayed on there. And
when you say ghetto, what do you mean by that in the sense of the radio side?
It was getting to, you know, when everyone's just taking it to the streets more. And it was too like this one's warring with this one and all of that, and just
yelling out on a microphone, right?
Yeah, this is like, but it was getting to that stage where it was getting all physical and stuff like that. So I kind of had to nip it in the bud before it got too much. But yeah, stayed there. So I remember one Christmas day on there, I decided to do a house show. I had enough tunes to do a whole house show. And then from then, I think I'd done a show and it went down well. It's like, I think I was the first one to do a show of that style of house anyway, which was more soulful house and stuff like that, like funky soulful house. And that Christmas day, I think it was, if I'm right, it might be 2004 Christmas day or something like that. Yeah. And then from then, I've always been doing like house shows on there, and it was all right. And it was just the show was just blowing up, and it was, on Deja Vu. So it was like the early days of like the early Defected days and stuff like that, like Blaze and stuff like that, and Copyright, early audio or productions. What else does, Hard Soul, all that sort of vibe. It was just all the nice soulful, like Space Cat Records and this, like, all those sort of soulful, nice vibes. So, I was just doing, I was just on that. And then from then, it's never looked back, to be honest.
Yeah, of course, it's like, you know, when you start touching that music, it's a whole different. Yeah. It's a different sound, different feel.
It's just happy, music, and it just takes you to a different place. Yeah.
Well, so let me ask this question then, because you talk about the ghetto and you talk about Speed Garage and the other sounds of the London sound.
Yeah.
Is that what was the problem in the nightclubs with the shootings and stuff that was going on?
You see, where is it? With London, it got to a thing where it's like every genre had its thing. Like whatever's popular in London at the time, obviously gets the backlash of everything else. So even like the jungle drum and bass, they had it, the garage and stuff, and again that had it as well. And then the grime and that had it, like all the genres had its time where, because it was popular in London, so everything else just comes with it, the good and the bad.
Ah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so. Because, you know, in those Speed Garage parties and those grunge, you know, that scene, you heard a lot of, well, I'm not going to say drugs, because drugs was in all the dance music scene. Mm-hmm. But there's a bit of women, competition, ghetto fabulousness, alcohol, all mixed together.
Everything.
It brings out the wrong element sometimes. Yeah. The happiness that we went to these clubs no longer is not, part of it. It's more like, yo, don't get near my woman. What?
Yeah.
Or the competitiveness in the street that was going on.
Yeah, or people that just bring in their street politics to the raves and things like that. So
yeah, exactly. So I'm like always, why does these good things have to get ruined with one bad apple ruins?
Exactly that. So it's like, whatever, it's from the same thing from the jungle days, same thing. Like, that was the popular thing in London. So everyone wants to be there, innit? So, and then when anything that's on the roads, any dramas that are, any politics on the streets, obviously that person's going to end up going to the like main rave, and so is the other people. And then people end up clashing in there. And it went through to the garage days, to the grime. It's like, or it went, carried it all the way through. And then, yeah.
But does that make you say to yourself, I don't want to be part of this?
Yeah, at a point,
to that point, you know, where you get older, right? You look around you.
Yeah, and you get, especially when you see, like, they want to blame music for it and things like that, and or the DJs even, and you get, oh yeah, it must be this person's fault, like, and that person, and you think, well, you're just playing music.
Yeah, just playing music.
Yeah, and then they try to, yeah. So I've been there when they try to blame you for things, and oh yeah, nice, because he's playing, that's why there's trouble. Like,
and well, that was a thing in New York, for example, in the 90s. A lot of club owners didn't want the hip hop crowd for that same reason. They knew that the element would spend money, but there would always be a possible gunshot and killing. And who wants to deal with that as a club owner? As great as it is to have a money crowd like that, that element brings, that music brought hostility sometimes.
Yeah.
Where house music was more of a love, dancing.
Yeah.
And then the owner would say to you, I really don't want that crowd because they don't spend enough money on the bar. But in England, that's not the case. In England, they drink more. Here, they drink water and they want to dance. That's the difference, you know? So for club owners, it's like...
Exactly that. So basically, even like that crossover from the jungle to the garage, it was like that. So everyone's thinking, oh, I don't want no more jungle in our clubs. And then start, yeah, let's do this house and garage thing. And then obviously until that got more like popular and everything else, then everyone started going there. And then it's just like an ongoing thing. But now it's all right. It's all good now. Like, it's all good now.
Everyone, it's changed. Yeah. But you know what? It takes, like I said, it takes a lot of things to happen to bring change.
Yeah.
You know? And then when you said people were blaming the music, you're talking the authorities, the police? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, the police.
So we would say, yo, Super D's playing. We don't want this guy here because his music and him, he brings the wrong element in this club, right?
And then you got other people that will jump on that bandwagon and they don't even,
That's why I'm making you say it, because people have to understand. They don't get it. They think it's all fun and love, this thing. Yeah. It's not always.
Yeah. They tried to, try blacklist me and all sorts, but fight through it. Like, I know it ain't, I ain't done nothing wrong in it. So you have to get
What do you mean they tried to blacklist you? Who was part of that whole machine that's trying to blacklist you?
The authorities, club owners, even like whispered, like they don't even know me. They don't know me, they don't know nothing about me, but someone, there's a lot of haters out there. And once you get yourself into a position where you are out every week and doing all of it, so you're popular in London, you're out every week. Oh yeah, it must be his fault. But so you get me. So yeah, it was mad like that. like she used it as a scapegoat basically. And but got through it. A lot of the people, they don't know, like I had to go to certain club owners and like, because certain promoters will still book me regardless, just change my name on a flyer, put Super Surprise DJ, but put the spell my name like S-U-P-A and then put catch a Super Surprise DJ, which, and then obviously.
Oh, people, so we're also the little trickery.
Yeah, yeah, to do all of that, because some people think, nah, I'm still booking you, I don't care, like I'm booking you, like, but we word it in a different way, just so they don't flag up or whatever not. And then so I was doing a lot of that, and then there's a lot of times I went to the club owners afterward and I was like, yeah, I introduced myself, yeah, I'm Super. It's like, oh, you know, I just played, you know, I just done a set. Is everything all right? Is your night all right? Oh yeah, good.
It's great.
Now they're thinking, oh, so what is the issue? What is the problem? Like, for one, you don't know me. They don't know me anyway. Don't know what I look like. Nothing. They're just on a hearsay thing, and jumping on the bandwagon. And then when I got in there, I played. No, there's no trouble or drama. Oh yeah, he's all right. You can play next week then. And then it was just things like that. So yeah, it was all right. Got through it in the end.
How long would you say that trouble was around you?
I don't know, a good year or two.
It's a struggle, right? When you have to fight club owners to say, yo, I'm not trouble. I'm not a problem.
Yeah. I'll go there on my own. Like I'll go to the club on my own and play and leave on my own. Like it's, yeah. But after a while, they knew them same club owners that used to think they give me my own nights. Yeah, you can have whatever night you want to do. Yeah.
But at that time when you were doing that, what was you playing soulful house music or you playing Speed Garage?
Nah, it's just like soulful house.
So
like,
you were still having that problem with soulful house music? I'm shocked.
Yeah, soulful house, like funky house, soulful house, yeah.
Because most of the time when you have soulful house, it's beautiful music. There's really never trouble with that music. I'm shocked.
It was just what was popular at the time in London, basically. So it's just the same thing that is saying it all carried on from whatever's popular at the time. So in that era, like it's like the funky ass, the soulful ass, that sort of vibe. And then the UK funky thing that came into it and all that. So it's like that sort of era. And yeah, obviously that was popular in London, so that's what all the crowds gravitated to.
Now around 06, 07, as Soulful House started to go really underground, because there was a time when Soulful House and the American house music was really captivating the UK.
Yeah.
Another music came into play, EDM from Europe. Did that make you change over to what you're currently doing now? As the music changed, because there wasn't a lot of that coming out anymore.
It's like went through like, yeah, from the soul. It's like up to this day, I still play a lot of the old stuff from back then. I still play today, like in my sets. So I'm obviously got to like more UK producers, because a lot of that, even like then, there's a lot of the US producers that we used to play like back then. And then obviously the UK producers started, like the underground UK producers, like obviously took that style and made it their own.
Right.
And that's when the UK, they call it UK, because everyone used to call it funky house then. And then obviously when the UK producers started getting involved, and they call it like UK funky. And
right. And we're getting away from the American sound and we're making our own thing now.
Thing. Yeah, but my set still include like will be a mixture of both. It got to that stage, will be a mixture of both. But it's like it was just the London sound basically. And it was a good vibe. It's still up to this day. Sorry.
No, it's okay.
Up to this day, it's like still play the same way. Obviously, it got to that little period around like 10, 11, 12, where it got a bit more techier.
Right.
Swedish
House Mafia, Axwell, all that's changing the sound.
Yeah, it's all like, and then you get more than, and then like Jamie Jones sort of vibe. Like,
yeah.
Like the Hungry for the Power and them sort of, that sort of vibe. That was big in London and stuff like that. And a lot of people started gravitating to that sort of scene and getting on that. I even dabbled in it a bit as well. Like just playing that sort of vibe. And like, it's good. It's got a groove. From it's got a good groove and nice vocals in some of them. Good, nice groove. I could work with it.
Right.
Yeah. And yeah, so basically he's this, that's sort of vibe. And then it's only of recent, it's like that's my sets always consist of that sort of vibe, soulful, funky.
So when does the production start for you begin along with all this
more like myself later than I've done a couple odd little UK funky sort of tracks, but nothing major. That was like 2009 or something, 10. And then there's only, obviously I've got me and Pioneer had a studio.
Let me show it by Pioneer.
Yeah.
That's Pioneer and Super D together.
Yeah. So we've had the studios from, when did we first have a studio? 2009-ish, and that around that time we had a studio and always yeah, we'd always had them and started doing stuff in there with different producers and stuff like that and whatever not, and then we ended up moving. We still had the next one like from like 2014 up until earlier this year in one studio, and then to this present day we've got one now. We're still got our studio together now in this where I'm sitting now.
That's so, where you and Pioneer work together?
Yeah, we got, this is our studio. And but production, like we're taking it more serious, is like obviously 20. No, obviously done little bits, but more so like when it came to lockdown, that was when more of the big break and took it more serious.
Wow. I had,
yeah. So that's when called on Mr. Taffer. It's like, I'm this.
Is that Pioneer's name, Mr. Taffer?
No. Someone else. This is someone else.
Okay.
Yeah. This is someone else. So called him in 2020 to come and work on some music and stuff. Because he's good at what he does and that, and on the same wavelength. So, like, yeah.
So this consummation happened during COVID, right?
Yeah, where that's when me and him linked up anyway. That's when me and him linked up to do certain tracks and stuff. But this at this time now as well, so say like from 2018, sort of 2018, on more and early 2019, there's like that sound, that I'm a Piano sound. I was playing a lot of that, which is like, obviously it's like slowed down. I was like from South Africa and stuff like that. Yeah,
it's a South African thing. It's a South African sound. I'm a Piano.
Yeah, so I was into that. Obviously still playing the soulful, playing the Afro tech stuff, and just a whole blend of stuff in it. I've never ever pigeonholed myself in to say, this is what I am. I'm a soulful house DJ. I'm a funky, I'm a Afro tech DJ. My set's kind of, it's like a mix and blend of all of them.
So basically you're a selector, basically. You're just someone puts that music together, feels that what he thinks is good. You're going to dance to this.
Yeah, exactly that. And even though I can do, if I need to, if I'm in somewhere, if I'm somewhere where okay, this is what it is. Obviously, I can adapt to each of those genres that I just mentioned as well. If I was in a predominantly Afro House event or Amapiano event, I can solely do that as well. But yeah, basically got into the love of that Amapiano thing, and started creating, I don't know, just our style of it. Obviously, at the first stage of it, you're learning still, like sound. So obviously, like the first like production to the sound that ain't the real sound to them, but it works for us in the UK.
Wow.
Yeah, but to them, they'll probably say, "Nah, that ain't Amapiano. That ain't this." They'll probably.
Well, you gave it what you thought.
Yeah. Basically. Right.
You take it and you turn it somewhat to make it and palatable to the English crowd, to the London crowd.
Basically. And then we've got done a tune. Called one of my friend DT, he had a tune with a singer called Lush Kills called King and Queen. And he gave me the tune to remix ages ago. And I was I was busy and stuff anyway, dilly-dallying and just busy up and down and in and out of the country and whatever not. And then obviously until then lockdown hit, obviously I had more time on my hands then. So that's when I called Taffer and said, yeah, come, let's do this. And on the back of that, tune blew up.
Who'd you sign that tune to?
To Columbia. Sony Records.
Oh, Sony Columbia.
Yeah. And this was during lockdown. That was during lockdown. It got signed before it got into the clubs, basically.
Yeah, it was no club scene.
Yeah, there's no club scene at the time.
There's no club scene. There was nothing. It was just you were all home streaming.
Radio, radio. And
just
and,
radio or you're on Facebook Live or Twitch, right?
The live streams and stuff during the lockdown and that as well. I was doing a lot of that. But yeah, so from then you got a little taste. So from that, just kept on it basically. And then started more productions, couple remixes and stuff like that. Done track with Deneo, we done a Rizkid remix, Essence remix, me and Mr. Taffer. Didn't get released. And was on the verge too, but that was all that background stuff,
right?
Politics, I don't know. Disheartening, but
happens.
It happens.
The one that you had on Sony, how well did that stream for you guys?
Okay, it could have been better, but then I felt like they could have done more. Like going put on it, maybe they could have done more. I felt that way.
Well, what did you expect? Okay, let me ask that question better. When you were signing the deal, what were you expecting from them?
I was expecting, you know, like the mainstream push, the underground covered by it.
Gotcha. So you're looking the overground, the pop side.
Yeah, because the underground, I got that covered. That's like the scene that I'm in it, and the front runners are like I'm part of the front runners. So and the rest of them are all around me. So that's all covered. It's just about the mainstream side of things, where there's only so much you can do in terms. But that's where I thought they would take it to a much bigger level.
Were you hoping for like example? Radio One, that, or did you accomplish that part?
Accomplish that part.
Well, I'm talking about A-list radio and Spotify, this big Spotify list.
That's what I was hoping for. Obviously, it was on rotation, but it wasn't on the A-list like rotation. So,
that's a dream of everyone to have that A-list. Spotify gets it in all the, you know, in the mid playlist. You know, where where Beyonce and all them are, and just doing millions and millions and millions of streams. That's what you want. We had a great record, but it's not locking in. What do you mean it's not locking in? Well, we can't get it on this playlist, and it's not on this. You know, people understand that. They see it. Oh, they think everything is fantastic. Because like you said, you had the underground covered.
Yeah.
But what you needed with the top side, the overground, you're expecting Sony to do that.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what they could have done more or whatever, but I just felt like they could have. But again, is what it is. You move in it, so, and then crack on.
But it did open a big door for you, I presume, right?
Yeah. Like you get noticed more, and people probably take you more seriously as well, and can have different conversations and whatever not. So, yeah. So on the back of that, got to do other remixes and stuff. So it was all good. Done track with like the Nao, done a remix for Georgia Smith and things like that.
So at least 50% of it was maybe you didn't get exactly what you wanted, mm-hmm. but the other 50% you did get other things to kind of compensate somewhat.
Yeah.
Not that you don't want a hit record. We all love a hit record.
Yeah. But it's what it is sometimes.
It's a tough game now. It's a different game. It's not it's based on algorithms, not based on quality. It's crazy.
I definitely noticed that one.
You learned that one fast, I bet, right?
Yeah, I noticed that one. I learned that one very quick.
A lot of us did. Mm-hmm. A lot of us did, because we started to realize it wasn't the quality of the music, it was the quality of the algorithm and how it's locking. And if you come from a record shop mentality, where you listen to a record, say that's a hit or that's not a hit, your brain is going, I know this, I know it was right, but what happened, right? You had to, it's like retooling yourself.
Yeah, the same thing as like with the, when we've done the Wizkid remix that me and Taff have done. It's like underground scene, everything, all the, like One Extra are playing it, BBC One Extra, all these stations are playing it, have the conversations and that, but obviously to them, remember, it's a big superstar, innit? So probably in their eyes, obviously they ain't told me that, but thinking, wow, why are we making this person do a remix? Who is he? Why are we putting that his remix? It sounds good, but is it gonna bring in the numbers? In there, that's all they care about, numbers, innit? It's a numbers game, innit? But obviously they didn't even give it that chance.
No, huh?
And then the Justin Bieber remix came out. You get me? Which to them,
that's,
it makes
horrible. More... That's it's just let me just use this word. That's so disheartening. It makes you want to take everything you do and just sometimes you get so disgusted with shit like that. When you hear that, you're like,
you know what it is? It's you see like when it's played everywhere, you see the reactions everywhere. Videos, they see it like and you're thinking, this is gonna do like the damage. And then
Super, was there another Columbia? You say you signed it. Was there also another option that you were handed at the time when you had door number one and door number two that you maybe in hindsight would have said I shouldn't went with them?
Yeah, you know what? The thing is as well, a couple of people did. There was a lot of interest in that track at the time as well. I think Defected was interested in it as well at the time. There is, but sometimes, you know, it's a learning thing, isn't it? Someone you run with what you think is right at the time, but then sometimes the other person, you never know. I don't know. There was a lot of interest. I think it was about three labels that was interested. Yeah, but
if you could do it over, what would you do differently? Who would you have went with?
It's a tricky one. I maybe would have went maybe affected because they're more maybe because that's they're more dedicated to the house scene more.
Okay.
In the house world and maybe more in it's a tricky one. I don't know.
It happens. Yeah, you know, when you look at the landscape, you have to ask yourself, did we make a mistake? We've gone with such and such, because sometimes, you know, it's not always the bigger company. Sometimes it's just the right people that know how to work the record.
Exactly that.
You learn that over. That's something you pick up as you go.
Yeah. Know? Yeah. 100%.
You can't know that until this happens.
Yeah, basically. And it's like, you move and you just pick yourself up and you move in it and on to the next one. So that's it.
Are you still doing radio now?
No, I just do guest shows. I ain't got a permanent show, but I just do guest shows like One Extra and Kiss FM and things like that. Yeah, I just do guest shows now and again.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I got a few coming up soon. So like over the Christmas period and stuff like that.
Wicked.
So yeah. But I wouldn't mind getting back into it and doing it properly and have a proper show.
Okay, so let me send my announcement. Yeah. All three. Super D's looking for a new radio station. He needs a new station to
mainstream. Mainstream now.
Mainstream. He wants Capital. He wants Radio One Extra. He wants the big ones. He don't want no little small mom and pop shop. He wants the big boys.
I'm ready for that now.
So, you know, another thing I found out, that you've gone to places like Ghana and stuff.
Yeah.
How did that happen? You know, because I don't hear anybody from the house world, anyone going out to those places.
Yeah. It's a nice experience. Went there, was it? Beginning of this year, actually. The 2nd of January. The guys like me, myself, Pioneer, like Coastips, the whole.
I'm sorry, Gambia. I didn't mean Ghana. Gambia.
Nah, Gambia ain't gone yet. I'm going next week.
Oh yeah, I was right. Was I right, Ghana?
Yeah, Ghana. I've been already earlier this year.
I was right. What? I had my intel right. People correcting me.
Gambia, I'm going next week.
Next week he's going to Gambia. Yeah, I'm talking about Ghana. Go ahead.
Yeah, so Ghana. Yeah, it was a nice experience. A guy from my area, he lives out there now, named French Kiss. He lives out there. He took us out there. He done an event called House Africa, and he flew us out there to do an event out there. It was nice vibe. But again, it could work because a lot of people as well from London and stuff fly out there as well. Anyway, as well. So
is it a big vacation spot for Londoners?
Yeah. Especially like the December period and like Christmas period and New Year's and stuff like that and early it's a big spot for them. It's all good.
Let's talk about this as well. Your label nights.
Yeah.
What's up with that? How?
So I've got
HOUSUPA. This is House.
Yeah. This is House Super.
House Super.
Yeah. So that's my label, House Super. Which I've got various producers from the scene that's on there, that's got music on there. So started a night where I get them to the producers that are on the label, make them come and showcase like new productions and stuff like that, and people can come, they're like, every time they come there, they're going to hear something new from one of the producers that they've made. And that's basically just to showcase their music. And it's always been a vibe. Like we've had one venue in Brixton called Pop. And that was, like, we've done that for about a year in there. And it was like, it was good numbers. It's like nice vibes, like every last Thursday of the month. And then But we have to move venue now. So I'm in the for the new year, going to be in a new venue and everything, can start it back up again.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, because it's been off for the last few months. So yeah.
So we have to look out for your new records.
Yep.
Your new label nights.
Yep.
Your festival dates around Africa and in Europe.
Yeah, festival. I'm got to do my own festival. So I'm there's three of us involved. Like, do a festival called Originals. So it's like,
the Originals Festival. Everybody, take a look.
Yeah. So that's
where do you hold that one, Super? Where do you do that?
Well, this year was in Crystal Palace Park.
Oh wow! Look at that, Crystal Palace Park. Nice.
That one was in Chelmsford. That was in Chelmsford, but this year the one was Crystal Palace Park in South London. So that's myself, DJ Kismet, and Fever. The three of us that do that. We started a rave called Originals back in 2017. Basically, it was just from a little rooftop and stuff, and it's kind of just built it up. It's build up momentum for it and everything, and it's each event got bigger and bigger. During lockdown we done a social distance festival. That was the first, because we had a festival planned and then obviously lockdown happened, but we got to do a social distance one, and that went well. And then obviously as soon as we come out of lockdown, we ended up doing two festivals within 6 weeks. So we came out of lockdown, I think it was like July, when was it? July 21 or whatever it was. 21.
You know, here's something I want to ask, because I'm thinking about this festival. You're actually now coordinating as a festival organizer.
Yeah.
What's involved with putting a festival at that level together? Insurance and all, you know, trying to just tell people they don't have we know that nobody has a clue what's involved with, you know, they think it's like just turn up, everybody does this. It ain't that. How much planning goes into this? What kind of work?
Everything. You have to, luckily, we've got good people around us, and people obviously employ people to, okay, this is. You got site management, this one you can obviously, but at the same time you still have to oversee everything and muck in and put in the groundwork, and you're still ending up carrying this and lifting this and putting this together. But everything, every little thing, all the insurance, you have to make sure there's medicals there, make sure everything possible you can think of that you'd have to go through with a like fine comb.
And also you have to make a major investment, right? Before you even sell a ticket.
Yeah, exactly. All of that. So yeah, so you have to know what you're doing, and you have to make sure this day and age, you have to know that you're gonna get the numbers in, or you can easily go bankrupt.
Easily, right? One of those can bankrupt you.
Yeah, 100%. But yeah, man, even that world, yeah. But at the moment, we're just planning. We've got our next one scheduled for next year, August, in the same place in Crystal Palace. We're just planning towards that. Obviously, we have club nights in between that, and then yeah, so it's all good, it's all hands on deck at the moment.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Super D, man.
Thank you. Man, bro.
But just one thing I want to make sure. Is it people know you for the tribal sound now? Is that like the monarchy for you? Is that the moniker?
It's like my sets is consist of Ama Piano, Afro House, Soulful House, Tribal, all of that. I play a mixture of all of that, but at the same time, I play each thing individually as well, if need to be. So I don't pigeon. I ain't pigeonholed in one set genre. Every time anyone says my set, the majority of the time it's gonna be a mixture of all of those things.
Oh yeah, somebody just asked me, what song says I'm Super D and I made it?
What? Sorry.
There's a song out there that says I'm Super D, and I made it. Is there a song out there like that?
Nah. Must be an imposter. I ain't made it yet. One day.
Are you sure? Because they, all right. But aside from that, we wish you all the best of luck, my brother.
Nah, thank you.
Those festivals are no joke to take on. And the financial risks, no matter how successful you can be, could take one or two, could knock you right out of the park.
Definitely.
Both ways. Knock you into stardom or knock you into
a
crazy house, a rubber room.
That's me. Nearly was that one time.
I bet. And that's what I tell people. This is why it's called two house stories.
We had our setbacks and stuff, and then you have to bounce back. Like obviously this year was like a bounce back year, and we had our last festival we had in July we had Dennis Ferreira headlining and DJ Mafarisa from South Africa and Shimza. So we had to bounce back heavy this year, and then next year we'll go again.
Start all over again, right? A reset. Next year's going to be really good. I bet it's gonna be a lot better.
Yeah, bigger and better.
So. We're getting away from COVID. It's still around us, but it's not as aggressive and locked down as it was when it happened.
There's a flu going around now.
I know there is. I know people who are sick with it. It's crazy. Another variant. But they're not calling it anything. They don't even know what the hell they just say.
I feel a bit funny myself.
Oh, really?
Yeah, a little stuff, but nah, I'm all right.
Look after yourself, my brother, and thank you again for sharing your time with us on True House Stories.
Yeah, man, good.
We wish you all the best. And to everyone around the world, let Super D know how much you love his music, all right?
Yeah, man, follow me on Instagram and all the socials, at DJ Super D. That's... at DJ SUPAD, that's on Instagram, Snapchat, Facebook, Twitter, or X, what they call it now. I think I'm even got a TikTok now. So
that's right, you got TikTok. Me too, I know.
Yeah,
I was against it for a long time, but now we're working on TikTok.
Yeah, so yeah, man. And my SoundCloud, my mixes and stuff on SoundCloud. That's it.
All right.
Good.
You heard it from Super D. Super D, stay with us. Good night to everyone around the world. Next week, we got Robert Coleman coming on from Richard Long Associates, RLA, the sound system designer from the 70s who had Paradise Garage and all those great clubs. Robert Coleman's an OG. He's going to be right here to tell you all about Richard Long, who's no longer with us. So catch you all next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. Good night.